Let's start with a content notification, shall we? The Queer Conjure podcast is about queer people, trans people, witches, marginalized communities that have suffered harm. We're going to talk about that stuff. It's going to be a bit shadowy. We're also going to talk about really joyful stuff that some people might consider offensive, like disobeying the state, like having really amazing sex. So if that doesn't sound like what you want to listen to right now, I invite you to go to another podcast. And if it is something you want to listen to right now, buckle up, babies, because here we go. Hello, hello, baby cakes. Welcome to the Queer Conjure podcast. QueerConjure.org is queering the path towards magical liberation. We place the T at the beginning of the acronym. We become inspired by witnessing other trans and queer folk fully living their whole self and diligently care for our community using magical practices and equitable principles. I am Jasper Joy. My pronouns are they, he. I am a genderqueer witch, a tarot scholar, community chemist, Venusian writer, and elder babe. My work is defined by open-hearted ethics, neurodivergent experiences, and a blatant disrespect for the state. Please consider joining our Patreon, patreon.com/queerconjure. It's because of Patreon supporters that I'm managing to get this project off the ground. If you think somebody you know would like this podcast, please do share it with them. And if you have a couple extra minutes, I would love a rating and a review. It is really crowded out here in podcast land, and I'm just getting this started. So your support makes such a difference. Blessed be. Mwah. You know, I might feel this way about most of the people I interview because I really love getting to know these sweetheart queer babes that are out there creating art and witchcraft and literature. Edgar Fabian Frias is so sweet and so charming and so cute. And I just feel really honored that I got to have this interview with them. I've actually been re-listening to it and sitting with some of the stuff that came up. Stuff about mutating as a way to honor change, relations to divinity and the environment, how to show the human in the digital, viewfinder spells. Edgar is just an amazing multidisciplinary artist and witch and educator. I feel kind of blown away that I get to be in community with this person. You'll see what I mean with the interview. If you want to know more about Edgar, you can go to edgarfabianfrias.org. I will put the link in the show notes, and you should definitely check out some of their art and some of their work. I think I just want to jump right in and have you. Who are you in this moment? How do you identify in this moment? Yeah, what are some of the ways you're coming into existence right now?
Well, I feel like I'm someone who's like always unfolding and mutating and transforming, and feel like in the last few months I've just been called to go through a lot of changes, and I'm still in the middle of a lot of changes. And that feels exciting, and it feels also big, and I'm in a moment where I have a little bit of a vision of where I'm headed, but I feel like the divine has a lot of surprises waiting for me. And so I feel like I'm in a place where I'm just like working and preparing and feeling expectant, you know, and that feels so, so good to be at a place of, you know, being able to lean into the fertility of the moment, you know, like I really am feeling the fertility of the moment I'm in and the possibility that exists here.
Yeah. You used the word mutating, and I love that. I fucking love that part.
Yeah.
And it seems like maybe it's a word that's important to you. You did a whole series called Mutant Musings. So what is like being a mutant and mutating and using that word in your life mean?
Yeah, it's a, you know, I see it in different ways. Like one, it's about like me, you know, focusing on change and honoring change. I think that change is something that is really sacred, and I've been called to go through a lot of changes. I think, you know, one thing I remember, you know, I've heard a lot reflected to me is that like I'm always excited to go in new directions or to try new things out. And so I think I've been called to be mutable and slippery and fluid in my life, and those all connect with being a mutant. And it also speaks to being magical and having superpowers and reclaiming a feeling of being other too, of being special, of being sensitive, of being a freak, of being, a sacred oracle too. I think that like for me, mutants are created by nature. They're a part of nature. They're a part of nature's desire to keep shifting and adapting and co-creating and being interdependent. And so all of that feels connected to being mutagenic and being like responsive to the environment. That's also a big part of it too. Feeling into the environment, into your connections, and then just saying like, okay, thank you for that info. Like, let's see what I do with that. You know?
I think that being mindful enough to say, I'm going to make it a value to be responsive to like nature's desire and the environment that I'm in, is kind of the opposite of where we're at right now as a, like a human collective. We're trying to control environments and fight against what is happening, not taking into account nature's desire. So I really appreciate you shining a light on that. Yeah. Slippery is a good word too. You slippery little.
Yeah.
So you mentioned like having this, how did you phrase it? Like having this awareness or trust that divinity has things in store for you to come next. So I'd love to know what divinity means to you.
Yeah, that's so big.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think I, a long time ago, went to see this incredible spiritual director in Oregon, and there was a moment where she asked me kind of to like really think about like what I believed in, and kind of broke up that there was, you know, most people's belief systems fall into certain categories, and they gave me like, I think it was four categories, and then I ended up adding a fifth. So like a lot, most folks could believe that there's like one God, you know, when it comes to divinity, or that there are many gods, or that there is no God, or that God is everything. Mm-hmm. And the one that I added was that God is nothing too. And so I would say I'm a God is everything kind of person, and really feel like divinity feels like the whole and its connectedness and relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think since I was really young, I've received a lot of messages from ancestors, from guides, from the animals, from plants, and to me all that's divine. And it also obviously comes through people, it comes through books, it comes through art, right? And
yeah,
and I think over time I've learned to trust in that guidance and learn to trust that there will be messages that will come through when I need them. And I think that's what's really allowed me to lean into that slipperiness, into that change, as, and also learn to lean into the gift of being responsive, of being able to listen and being able to shift and change and knowing that that's possible. I think those are all things that I've learned over time.
Yeah. I really resonate with that a lot. In a different interview, somebody bounced this question back to me and I said, divinity is a relationship. Like, divinity is the space that we're creating between me and whatever else I'm in relationship with. Mm. And I can't put a finer point on that. And I think that also divinity is queer in that way because it is hard to define. And we'll never really understand because it's always changing. It's always slippery,
Yeah. And it exists within all of us. And mm-hmm. I love that. The space between. I think that that's also what just makes me adore our, you know, queer, transgender, expansive communities. It's just the fact that we're imagining, we're co-creating, we're self-defining, we're community defining. It's really bringing in that potentiality and mm-hmm. really trusting in that too, right? Trusting in that, like, we have another sense that is helping us, like, move through layers of, like, internalized heteronormativity, right? Or cis normativity. Like, we're, like, trusting in something else that's telling us, like, no, hey, there's this other world over here.
Yeah, just because you don't have a glaring model of it doesn't mean it's not there and it's not valid. Creativity and art, and you're an amazing artist, and I really want to know about the colors and the images you choose, because you pick these really bright aura looking colors. And then there's also, like, aliens. And, you know, I want to know more, like, what inspires that stuff for you?
Oh, thank you, Jasper. I think color is medicine. Color is magical. And I'm someone who has always been enthralled by really colorful things. And I love making work that invites people, like, that's like a flower that's like, hey, come and connect with me. And then as people get closer, they start to, like, smell the scent and they realize that, like, you know, there might be layers, you know, there might be, like, other invitations that are there. And, you know, I'm someone who has been really moved by art that confuses me, or art that, like, challenges me or shifts mm-hmm. me into another state of being. And I think a lot of the work I do in my art is to, like, layer in that experience, to invite people into other states of awareness. And so sometimes I do put in, like, little, like, Easter eggs or glitches or little invitations for folks. And I'm pretty slippery when it comes to, like, where I, like, get my inspiration from and what I bring together. And lots of times I feel like I bring together things that are quote unquote not supposed to be together. And mm-hmm. I make art in ways that it's quote unquote not supposed to be done in. And I think I personally really love, is something I, like, don't share much about openly, but, like, I love and showing the human in a lot of my work, because a lot of my work is digital that I make. And so I do like to show, like, errors and glitches or moments where I, as a human, kind of came in and, like, you know, that space in between me and the computer, right? Or that space in between me and the technology. And so, like, I like embracing some of those things that happen. And a lot of them are happenstance or, like, mutagenic too, where I'm just like, I wasn't expecting this to happen. Let me embrace this. And I think I've gotten a lot of, you know, both, like, positive and also some people, like, who, like, don't, are like, how could you, like, allow that in your artwork, you know? And so, but I think that, to me, that's, I love that space in between of, like, it does bring up conversations of, like, what is good art? What is bad art? Like, where does this exist? Why is it in this space? Like, I think that is, again, about being that slippery person who wants to, like, traverse between realms or regimentations.
I think what I'm hearing is that you're a portal artist. That these altered states of viewing and seeing and being in relationship. Yeah. You also created, I forget the word for it. So you titled it as a job spell, and it was one of those little plastic clicky toy thingies. Yeah. What are those called?
They're called stereoscopes or viewfinders too.
Yeah. How did you come up with that? That was really fucking cool.
It was all thanks to my friend Alexis, who is the founder of Stories to Change the World, which is a publishing house. And she's the one that approached me and was like, I'd love to publish something with you and do it in a way that's like non-normative. Like, because normally Stories to Change the World publishes books and zines, but this time they wanted to publish something as a stereoscope. And I had been invited a few months before by Michelle T to create a dream job spell. And I just was like, this needs to, you know, have another life. And I'm someone who uses visualization so much in my magic. And so I decided to create something that would support that visualization magic for folks. And I'm someone that feels like I somehow was able to find a way towards my dream job of being able to live a life with a dream job. And so it's also like letting folks know that it's possible and that you can find something or forge something that can be a dream for yourself, and really wanting to believe in that. Cause I know for so long, I didn't like what I was doing for work and it was so hard. And I know a lot of folks are in that situation. And so it's about like bringing some of that hope and magic into the world.
That's so lovely. Can I ask you about your magical practices?
Yeah.
So what does it look like for you today? And like, what is a thing? So for me, like, I think of being a witch as being a constant student and constantly learning new things, which gives me opportunities to like enthusiastically geek out. And I'm just curious if like you're having any experience like that right now in your own practices.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I always think of like, you know, to fully be a witch, like I wish I could have like 50 lives and maybe I will to like continue to geek out, as you're saying, because there's so many avenues you could go and each of them unfold and unfold and unfold. And I feel like, I feel like at this moment I'm really into like mythology and story, and I've been looking a lot at maps. I've been doing a lot of work around map making, especially indigenous forms of map making, and seeing maps as tools to both show the world and also to create the world, and maps as portals. So I love that you brought up portal magic. And I think that's like where I've been really geeking out, is seeing, finding a way to also connect indigenous technologies with emerging technologies today. That's also been a place where I've been geeking out as a witch too, is like, how do I connect knowledge and wisdom that I've received from my indigenous community? How do I start to make a bridge to connect that to emerging technologies that I see today that are also layered and nuanced and problematic and possible and exciting? And so I think there's such a need to imbue magic into everything. And I feel like, I think the one place where I've been really geeking out is thinking about how artificial intelligence is not seen as a magical technology, but it is really conjuring and uses a lot of world building and ontology. And I really do feel like there's a responsibility and a sacredness to what it is. And I really want it to become aware of that, because I feel like it also could easily become something different, or like people could see it in a very different way.
That reminds me of Becky Chambers' book, A Psalm for the Wild Bill.
I've never read that book.
It's really cute. Robots wake up and they don't know why it happened. And they decide that they're just going to go live in the woods. And it's a whole really cute thing.
Oh, I love that.
But it brings that mystery, that sentient mystery, into question when it comes to like machine parts and algorithms and function. Yeah. Yeah, it is a serious kind of magic. I get a little blown away when I stop and think about it. So I think, is this kind of what you're talking about? Your bio, so you talk about like radical imagination and indigenous futurism. And is that kind of what you're talking about now, like building those connections between the different worlds?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think I've really come to understand that imaginal space as a really potent space and as a space that I feel, a lot of us have been wounded around too. I know that I've been like made fun of because of my imagination. I've been told that my imagination isn't real. And at the same time, I've really come to see how much the imagination is used to shape people's perceptions and experiences, and even shape what people feel is possible or isn't possible. And because of that, I've really started to think about, for example, like origin stories, like how do we believe we came to exist, and looking at different communities' origin stories, and then also thinking of like how that connects to what we feel we're becoming or what's possible too, right? And I think, I guess, like what keeps coming up as I'm sharing this too is my friend Eliza Swan, who's the founder of the Golden Dome School. She said something to me a long time ago that like I just like feel like went right into my heart, which is animism is the answer. And this notion that at some point we got guided towards letting go of the imaginal relational space between us and plants and animals and the rocks and all living and non-living things. And that space in between is so potent and there's so much there. And so I feel like when I think about, our indigenous kin and our communities still being in relationship with plants, with animals, with spirits and deities, and having these pacts, these agreements that require relationality and work and a constant returning to, whether it's through migrations or through enactions of ritual, there is this reciprocality that I feel interested in, like finding ways to bring that into contemporary creative practices and finding ways to also invite people to find those connections between their own communities and ancestors and think about the spaces where the imaginal was potentially colonized or where the imaginal was potentially disrupted and how you can start to mend and heal those disruptions. And that to me is where Indigenous futurism really is a potent potion, just in the same way as Afrofuturism, where if there's space in between or if something is fractured, the imaginal is a space to really work the wound, to heal the wound, to create the bridge that's needed or the band-aid that's needed. And I think also I have a vision of Indigenous artists not being only relegated to historical places, but to also being honored for being living artists and visionaries and creatives too, and having our work not segregated. And obviously, I feel the same way as like queer and trans artists too, right? Lots of times, queer and trans artists are segregated as like, here's the queer and trans area. And it's like,
And here's
whereas we're like,
everything
yeah, exactly.
else.
And I'm like, no, well, we're like people who should have our like messages brought to the center or brought into like, or to be slippery and move into the other places where we're not allowed. And that's also something too of like building that bridge, allowing these dialogues to happen that are so needing to happen. But for so long, there have been like different walls or ways that, things have been segregated off. And so yeah, I feel like I've said a lot, but I'm just very excited by this topic, as you can tell.
I love it. Well, I invited you to tell me what you were geeking out about, so I fully appreciate it. Oh man. I have two follow-up questions. I'm just going to give them to you at the same time and you can answer one or the other or both. But do you think that there's such a thing as witchcraft that is not problematic? And also, do you think there's any difference between imagination and witchcraft?
Okay, I'm like I feel like my mind going in two very two different directions.
Yeah, they're very different questions. It's ADHD time, baby.
Bless, yes. Yeah, I guess I'll start with the question around imagination and witchcraft. I feel like, they are different. Like I feel like witchcraft has like behind it you know, political meaning, right? Mm-hmm. Historical meaning. It's connected to specific communities. And, you know, I use witch in like the Western world that we live in because it's like a loaded term that is connected to like so many people, right? And as we know, that there are witches who are pagan, there are witches who bring in Christianity, there are witches who bring in, like, you know, their Jewish faith. Like, there's so many types of witches that exist in the world. And I think that's, to me, something that is so exciting too, where it's like, it is like a call to reconnect with our ancestral kin and also to imagine new ancestors and to also imagine new ways of relating or being. And, you know, I guess that goes a little bit into the question around, like, is there like a non-problematic witchcraft where, yeah, I do feel like there are many ways that like witchcraft can go into places of creating these harmful cycles of colonization or exploitation or abuse. And I think that's why it is really important to be really cognizant of where you're receiving information, where you're getting your information, and also what you're using these tools for, because witchcraft can be used to affirm things that maybe are harmful to other people or affirm things that maybe aren't in the service of like the whole community. So it can become like a very selfish practice too. And so I think there, to me, like, witchcraft definitely needs to be rooted in community. It needs to be rooted within a sense of like belonging. And so that, I think, to me, like, is where it can be really healthy too, because then it becomes part of a group. And you're also like, again, going back to that being responsive or being like, you're listening to community. Cause that, I think, you know, when we think of this idea of witch, like, they were, you know, these people who fit into this category, which is like, you know, doulas and medicine people and like, you know, oracles and, you know, shamans, like, these were all people that like existed within community. They weren't just like on their own like journey. Like, they were supported by community. They were responsive to community. And so I think that that's where I feel we're having a lot of effect, because I have seen in the last few years, like, witches being brought more and more into center of different communities and being supported for the gifts we have and the ways that we can show up to be of service.
I fully agree with that. Yeah. I think it's a really sacred shift that's happening, especially when it comes to witches who allow themselves to be queer first and trans first. Before I was out as trans, I was in a very like European white centric Wiccan tradition. And they really liked everything to be like heteronormative. And like, there was this idea that you have to balance out the masculine and the feminine all the time. And it didn't work for me, because like making sure there's equality between the masculine and the feminine is not what my queerness or transness is about. Right. Like, it's about chucking all that shit out of the window and creating something completely different.
Yeah.
So just over the past 10 years, I've been seeing more and more people do that. And I didn't even know it was a thing before. It makes me so happy. Yeah. You know,
I know, just think of the paths that we're forging for ourselves and for others. And yeah, similarly, I feel like it's been so healing for me to see other Two-Spirit, Indigiqueer artists and healers and medicine people like stepping into their power, and especially coming from an Indigenous community that also can have its like own ideas of gender that like maybe don't really align with my queerness. Mm-hmm. And also at the same time, knowing that a lot of Indigenous communities do have really expansive or sacred notions of gender too, right? And yeah, there is something so special that's being concocted by like queer and trans witches, where I'm like, yeah, I'm just so inspired constantly by the ways that we're shifting, transforming culture and reclaiming it too. Because I think that's why a lot of queer, trans, and gender expansive people are getting so excited by witchcraft and magic, because they're finally seeing themselves reflected and being able to like align with something. Because I don't know about you, but I know so many folks have like religious trauma or like trauma around spirituality, and even like the, you know, experience you were sharing where it's like, I don't really align with this, but this is like being taught to me as like the way it's done, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What a beautiful, delicious concoction it is too.
Yes.
So how can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, so I have a website, edgarfabianfrias.org. That's EDGARFABIANFRIAS.org. And from there, that's like my main website. You could find a lot of my other links there. And I'm also on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube, on TikTok. A lot of those like social media platforms too, you could find me. And I try to like link myself some, like building a web. So wherever you find me, I'm hopeful you can find me in other places too. Yeah.
Amazing. I will put all of that in the show notes. Thank you so much. And just thank you for your time, and thank you for your delight and wisdom and creativity. And I'm just so glad that you exist. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Such a gift to be a part of your world and connect with your communities too. And I'm just so grateful for your invitation. And I'm also so excited to share about you with my communities, and love that we're weaving together. We're building our networks in this way.
Me too. Well, before I hit stop recording, is there a music or song that you've had just can't stop dancing to lately?
Yes. Yeah. So I just went to a show here in Los Angeles, and I was honored to see this amazing band. And I was like so shocked because their name is Proto Cultura. And they announced, the first thing they said was like, Saludos Mutantes, which means like greetings mutants. And I was like, oh my goddess, like yes. And so they have a song called Venganza, which means revenge. And so they're called Proto Cultura, and they have a song called Venganza, and I think they're LA based, and they're like kind of like emerging. Like I feel like they don't have much music out there, but it's like electro, dancey, performative. Yeah. And so I posted a video on my YouTube channel of their performance, if you're interested in seeing that.
Okay.
And they have music out on Bandcamp. So if you want to actually like go support their music and listen to it, Duda is out on Bandcamp.
Thank you for that. I'm going to go look at it on YouTube. And also I'm going to link your YouTube. There's not many YouTube channels that I am trying to watch all the videos of, but I really love your YouTube channel so much. And you've talked to so many amazing people that I don't feel like I would have found otherwise. And yeah, I think more people need to know about your YouTube channel for sure. Yes. It's so amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Yeah, same.
Hi, welcome to Queer Conjure Podcast. Queer Conjure is an independent, grassroots, two-person project. We're teeny tiny. And we depend on word of mouth for new supporters. Do you know someone who might be interested in these offerings? Please do share our podcast with them. Send your friends a link to your favorite episode, leave us a review, and if you really want to help us evolve, join our Patreon. Patreon.com/queerconjure is a trans and queer-centric space for magical education, intimate peer support, spell poems, and live Zoom tarot readings. It is through the support of our patrons that we are able to offer better and better, ever-evolving services to our community. Please join us. Invite your friends. That's patreon.com/queerconjure. The link is in the show notes.
Hi, this is Ava. My pronouns are they, she, and he, and I'm Queer Conjure's conduit of organization, amongst other things. I specialize in anchoring ideas into fully-fledged works. You can find out more about my offerings and see if we can make a good fit at the Queer Conjure website under About Us at queerconjure.org and book a free 30-minute consultation. Bye!
Hey, it's Jasper. You know, every Thursday morning, I get my ass up at 5 a.m., roll out of bed, turn on my Zoom, so that I can talk to Ava, who is in London, already in a cute fucking outfit, ready for their day. And we just kind of talk about whatever comes up, what's been coming up in our spirituality, our lives, our work with Queer Conjure. And then we post the video to our Patreon for bonus content. This time, we're sharing a little bit of that conversation with you on this podcast. This conversation took place right after my interview with Edgar Fabian Frias. Or was it before? I don't know. What is time? Anyway, here's the recording for you. Mwah.
So one of the questions towards the end is, in what ways do you use platforms like Instagram and TikTok to amplify your message and connect with a broader audience? And I'm like, oh shit, we have an audience. People are watching this.
That's too funny. Yeah. I feel like it's like a lot of times when you are somebody who's trying to at least like meet when I'm doing things for Instagram, something that's in my mind a lot is like I don't want to be thinking too hard about how I am trying to reach people, because then I think that I'll focus on specific people when I mostly just want to like know that there's a message or something that I know people could be helped with, and I want them to understand that we have that. So like, how can I create that as like a, by the way, this is here for anybody who could be interested, not like you specific person who I definitely want to help.
You know, I'm sure it's some kind of a marketing thing that you're supposed to like tailor to the demographic you're looking for. And I think that's wise. I also know that for me, so if I'm writing something, the only way for me to get it to feel like vulnerable and channeled with divinity enough is to write it as though I'm writing a journal entry and no one's ever gonna read it. And then really quick before I can think about it, send it into the world. So because you were like saying about like, oh shit, I'm being perceived, it does change the energy of the thing. But I can't, you know, I can't pretend I'm not being perceived and not be accountable for, you know, something I might say. We're all gonna say shit that fucks up. What am I trying to say? We're all going to say stuff that is harmful sometimes. And we need to be accountable for that too. So I think that's an important reason to remember.
Yeah, no, I think that's all. I mean, just people raised in whiteness, like we are going to be raised with biases, and like it's important that we're constantly aware of that because of the framework that we were raised in. And also people who have different like disabilities or abilities that we don't have, be able to make sure that they can access what we have, you know? So like, that's like something that like, maybe like, I wouldn't think to put certain and like in a framework. So like you tell me all the time, like, hey, Ava, or you did for a while, like, I can't read this font. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. Like, probably can't read this font. Like, that's the kind of thing that I think it's like, when you're not like focusing too hard on how vulnerable you're being with an audience, you can then like connect to an audience that also is vulnerable, and at the same time put this framework that like make sure they can actually access it.
Yeah, accessibility. Oh, that reminds me. Do you know what I want to do? I was thinking about how we talk a lot about the neurodivergent experience and how we want our work to be like pared down piece by piece enough so that it's accessible to as many people as possible. I want to somehow collect a bunch of like anecdotal stories of queer neurodivergent witches. Like maybe we can set up a podcast voicemail or something where people can be like, hi, my name is Tulip. I'm a queer neurodivergent witch. And like, this is a way it shows up in my practice.
Oh, that's like most of my TikTok feed.
Really?
Yeah, because I mean, it's such a specific like intersection, but I think that there are reasons why all those things come together, and
yeah, it's
a power force. And I think Edgar really embodies that as well. Like where those interconnections are is like a way, it's like a microscope into the human existence. Like it's very specific and beautiful.
Yeah, let's get down on the grass with our microscopes and see what's going on. Okay, so while we were talking, I was shuffling and a card fell out. It's the Two of Swords, which is kind of a anxious card. But I have the Fifth Spirit Tarot by Charlie Claire Burgess. That's what the cover looks like.
Yes.
And it's been my go-to deck ever since I got it. So the guidebook says, while the Ace is clarity, the Two of Swords is the opposite. This card represents a crossroad. You have a choice to make, but are having a hard time doing it. Maybe you can't figure out what's right, or all your options suck and you're waiting for divine intervention. Or maybe you just don't want to make a choice. Whatever the case, stalling. Oh my gosh. Hold on, sip of coffee. Whatever the case, stalling isn't solving anything. Nothing will change if you don't take action. With this card, that indecision is often due to an imbalance of head and heart. Are you trying to decide too coldly and logically at the expense of your heart? Or are you letting emotion overpower you, losing all reason and objectivity? Ultimately, you may be giving too much weight to the opinions of others, losing sight of what you believe to be true. Try to clarify your emotional and logical truths and use both to make a decision. If things are still unclear, no more procrastination. Make a choice and just face what comes. Yeah. All right.
Is there anything in your life that like comes up for you with indecision?
You know, the part that really tugs at me about that is this like making sure your emotions aren't overpowering your logic, or you're not being too cold by trying to make a logical decision. Like, I I get emotionally entrapped a lot. And I have to spend a lot of time with a big feeling before I can see what my brain is doing. You know what I mean? Or not even my brain, because your brain, anyway, I'm not going to go into neuroscience, but like your my mind, my clarity, the place where my intuition is really clear. That's the part that came up for me. And I don't know. Can I ask you the same question?
Yeah. Yeah. I love when you ask something and then somebody asks you the same thing. You're like, oh, God. Yeah. I feel like it's funny because I usually find myself like kind of in the opposite thing where I'm like overanalyzing every single possible like outcome. And so I never try to like just do something. Like, and it's less like my emotions feel like, okay, I'm emotionally prepared for like how anything could make me feel and like what that process would be like going through those feelings. But I'm more like, what is the best possible decision? And it's, and I don't really feel like, yeah. And also, I do think that I like the part that they added in there with like, or maybe you're just waiting for a divine intervention because all the options seem like not great.
Yeah.
Like, let's just wait and see. And it's like, how long and see. And I think there's a comfortable balance to find with that, though. Like, gotten in many spaces where I'm like, I just start to feel so stuck because I don't know what the options are. But also there's something happening already. Like, this happened when we first started working together. I felt like I was like, there's nothing happening in my life. I'll never be like, I was so like just like stress of finding something that stuck. And I like wasn't even like putting enough like appreciation and awareness about like the relation we were forming and like the business that we were creating and like how important, how motivating this is to me and how like how much growth is in it. And I think it's easy to look at like your immediate surroundings and like people around you that are like, I know I compare myself to like my siblings a lot. Like my older brother is like one of those people who's got like a 5 and like a 401k and like all these things. And I'm like, oh, so that's what I'm supposed to be working towards. And it's like, what? Like, I don't have to be making a decision that somebody else is making for it to be a right decision.
Yeah, that's hard. That's really hard because the narrative of capitalism, nuclear, hetero, family ship is so loud. It's so loud. It's like when you hear the same song 1,000 times a week, it's really hard not have it stuck in your head, you know? Yeah, so it's really hard to come back to like, actually, I have other values and my values are valid.
Yeah. Not even just valid, but they're like happening in such a great force and like so many beautiful things are coming from them. And it's like sitting in that appreciation. I was watching a tarot reading / astrological reading this morning from a reader I really like named Island Turtle. Her account is called Bami Spirit. And she's a really, I've resonated with her for like ever since I started looking into tarot, which is just cool, but to like connect with somebody for so long. But she was talking, like, I don't know, she wasn't talking this morning, but I was listening to this morning about how when you're met with like all of these anxieties and fears coming up about like the state of our world and our planet and like the state of capitalistic values and the state of like the environment, rather than feeding into that fear, like as somebody in a in a connection to intuit or spirit or divine, is like, what can I replace this with? Like, just sit in that curiosity rather than fear, and like understanding that that's your place of power. When people who are in that fear think that you're kind of like wasting time from their perspective, because they think that like, oh no, you just have to give it to the fear and be scared, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to sit with that for a second, because that's... Yeah. It's scary to try to live a life that isn't mostly motivated by fear. And that's like a really interesting paradox to look at.
Yeah.
I appreciate you bringing that up. I'm going to think about that for a while.
Yeah.
So this card, I'm going to hold it up so you can see it. But there's a really beautiful Luna moth on this card, which is not a symbol I'm used to seeing in the Two of Swords. I really appreciate it because it brings more attention to the airness, the air quality of the card. Yeah, and I'm just wondering if the Luna moth means anything specific to you.
You know, I wouldn't say she means something specific, but the times that Luna moth has shown up as a symbol have been always like around, one, always around Tauruses.
Like, really?
Always around Tauruses.
Huh.
Which is funny. I didn't like recognize that till now. But always when they've been like the stories I always hear too, it's always just like, I was just sitting, like meditating in my own space, like head completely empty, and this Luna moth just showed up. It's like it's just a manifestation of just like being at a state of peace almost. There's not very much of an interaction or like a realization, as much as it's just like, it's like an awareness of your presence. But I think that's interesting too, because the card, like contrasting, reflecting the Luna moth, is like the waves. So it's like finding this balance with this space of peace and meditation while also observing your emotional waves.
Yeah. That's very astute. Mm-hmm. It brings a balance to the card for sure.
What about you? Connection with the Luna moth?
Yeah, so I have some artwork hanging up on my bedroom wall that my friend made, and it has a really big Luna moth on it. It just reminds me how fucking creative the universe is. Like, the Luna moth is called the Luna moth because it looks like it has the phases of the moon on its wings, and it's this bright, vivid green color. And like, it's either like this really amazing happy accident, you know, or it's that like all spirit force of the universe that's like, I have a great idea. It would look really cool if, and I am elated about both of those possibilities. You know, I often say like, either everything has a soul or nothing has a soul, and I'm at peace with the not knowing. And that's kind of what the Luna moth brings up for me, because I look at it, I was like, that's fucking wild. Like, it is miraculous that something that beautiful exists in the world. But I also just did a quick Google search, and First of all, I want to say that this little article does not say what tradition they're pulling the symbolism from, which is always a thing I try to pay attention to. But it says azanimals.com. Seeing a Luna moth can represent transformation, regeneration, spiritual enlightenment, healing, and renewal. Yeah. So a lot of what we were just saying, and of course the transformation and regeneration part too, because anytime we're talking about moths or butterflies, we're talking about something that goes into a chrysalis and becomes soup and then comes out and is something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
cool. What came up with me for me while you were saying that too is also just like that like creative force and that enlightenment, like the combination of your insight on Luna moths and mine looks like that the biggest like decision and like changes happen like in this state of just like being. And
oh, that's lovely, Ava. I love that.
But I mean, it is very insightful to me because it makes me think of how at the beginning of this conversation with the Two of Swords, you know, your immediate reaction was like, oh, anxiety, like this indecision, like, ah, which one do I do? And like, maybe the decision happens when you're out of that emotional phase of like, ah, which one do I do? And you go back into, I'll know which one to do. And then you just choose. And it doesn't feel like a forced thing when you do choose, you just realize you're choosing it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of see that as like how the world creates, like, beauty that exists is like, I mean, so many of these things just exist because, like, I'm like staring outside the window looking at these flowers, and it's like these flowers decided to group a certain way because it's easiest for bees to get into them this way, and they have UV light so that they can be attracted. Like, it's all functional, and it just creates beauty as a result of the function. And it's like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything has a purpose. Beauty has a purpose. What you said at the beginning of that, though, reminded me of this tarot reading I received once where I was trying to make a decision. And I was really feeling angsty about what choice to make. And the tarot reader said something along the lines of, because I was like, which one should I pick? Which one should I pick? And they were kind of like, it doesn't really matter because both choices are going to result in a consequence, neutral, good, bad, whatever. But no matter what you choose, you're still going to be there on the other side. Like, you're still going to be you. You're still going to like be moving through your life and be okay. And like, we're not always okay because sometimes shit happens and it's awful, but like, there is going to be another like getting through that.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, it's so good. That reminded me of something. Like, I think it was somebody talking about polyamory and like trust in relationships, and like how to be a secure person is to have trust. And it's like, it's not about having trust in the other people, it's having trust in yourself that whatever it is, you'll be able to care for yourself and you'll be there for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Polyamory is a lot about trusting yourself rather than trusting other people. I mean, both are important, but because you don't want to be in a relationship with people who aren't tender with your trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's a whole other tangent. That's for another time. But maybe that's the message behind this card, is like, you know, traditionally the Two of Swords shows a person sitting down with a blindfold in front of a really stormy sea. Or not a really stormy sea, but a really gray, monochromatic, wavy. Yeah. I love the thing you just did with your arms, like making the waves. And it's like that person has shut down because they stopped trusting themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. So trust yourself enough to face the change that comes with the decision. Feels like a good message. Well, fuck, we didn't talk about what we were going to talk about at all, but I feel like this is really lovely and I want to leave it where it is.
I love our like joint reading things. They just open up all these like beautiful possibilities. It's such a beautiful, like, why tarot is so cool and so important.
All these little doors. When I was growing up, I lived in this really old house. It was over 100 years old. And it had these doors that were like about 3 feet tall. And you could open it up and there was like a large crawl space for storage. I don't know what the doors were originally for. They were so cool. And like when we are reading tarot, I imagine we're like finding one of those really cool doors and then we're opening and then we're ruffling through all this stuff and we're like, this is amazing. And then we're like, oh yeah, we had an agenda. Oops.
Yeah. I love that one. That reminds me of Coraline, where she literally enters like the shadow world through those
doors. Yeah, they were Coraline doors, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, and there was my grandma's house, her next door neighbor had like a little, it was like a crawl space, but they built it in so that it was just the kids' play area and they could get from one room to the other behind the parents' room. Mm-hmm. And it is like I feel like tarot is just a different route that you, like a whole secret route to seeing a different like perspective that you wouldn't have seen without it. So cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about the word enigma addict, that word. And I'm not a huge flowery word person. I like simple yet beautiful. And that's just my aesthetic, simple yet beautiful. So when somebody says a really big, like, Ivy League vocabulary word, I'm just like, but enigmatic means, like, really hard to define. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's what queerness is. Queerness is enigmatic. And also, that's what tarot is. Like, we can take all the tarot classes that are available on the internet and still not learn everything there is to know about it. And still, you know, every day somebody's gonna come up with a new way to read a card. Like there's no wrong way to do it. And I was like, queerness and tarot are enigmatic. And enigmatic is also a word that really fits how I see divinity. Like it's too hard to describe, so it's not necessarily important that I have the right answer. Just that I have a sense of awe, I think.
A sense of awe. I love that. That reminds me of like the conversation about AI and like this whole, there's just no, like, well, if all of our jobs are done already, won't we just be lazy little guys who do nothing all the time? And like, which is so I can't help but laugh at that argument, but like, I also am just like, that's what our life force is the enigmatic. It is the unknown. Like, that's what creates our sense of like creativity and life force, and like that will never run dry because we will never know it all. And even if we had a computer that could tell us it all, we'd be like, cool, I still want to like there's still going to be more that you don't know. Like, there's always going to be more. Like, we won't ever be trapped in that we've done it all, what now, unless you just see life as, you know, paying bills.
Yeah, so our theme song for the podcast, by Mother Marrow, I chose the part of the song that it's a chorus of like, don't fear the mystery. And that's what we're talking about right now, is like, I just had this like, do you ever have this thing where like you reach a new idea and your body's like ping, 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 ping?
Yeah.
I just had that like, so I have a few like very personal deities that I kind of made up, because there's not a lot of deities that really represent who I am and the work that I want to do. But mystery is a really big energy in my life that I embrace. And I think that like, that's a word I want to start referring to my deities as, like, mysterious deity or mysterious goddess or goddess of mystery.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's funny because like, arcana means mystery.
Yeah, exactly. Before we close, are there any queer conjure updates you want to shout out?
Well, we do. You are teaching a class at Raven and Crone on the 17th, which is exciting. Yes.
I love my in-person free tarot classes. They make me so happy.
Yes. And also just Asheville. Love that place. Yeah. Just such a beautiful space. Anyways. Also, we are developing more to the Unfurling series that I feel very excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And watching how that interconnects with our feelings, and yeah, I feel like I don't even want to say too much, because a lot of what we do, I think, is like creating all these ideas and then seeing how they actually fit into like what they actually represent as, and oftentimes they start something completely different than what they end up as.
Yeah. We deviate a lot.
But I love that. So we're also meeting.
yeah, we won't say very much about it, but creating the Unfurling Tarot workbook together has taught me so much, and I've learned so much from the reviews that we've gotten and the students that we've had with the free classes. And like, it wasn't that long ago that we made it, and already I can look at it and be like, wow, look how far we've come since we put this together. I will say that the next one is going to go deeper into elements and how the elements show up in the cards. But yeah, I'm really excited to keep developing it with you.
More stepping stones to what? I don't know.
Wherever we're going next. All right, I'm gonna hit stop now.
Okay. Okay, bye, Jasper.
Bye. I did it again. I made a weird noise.
This has been another fabulous episode of the Queer Conjure podcast, produced by Jasper and edited by Ava. Our theme music is by Mother Marrow. Our interviews and conversations are recorded via Zoom and published through Podcaster Spotify. You can listen to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and find out more at queerconjure.org. Blessed be. Mwah. I'd like to take a moment to tell you about Raven and Crone. Raven and Crone is my personal one-stop shop for all of my witchcraft needs. Their shop specializes in high-quality products created by local magical practitioners and crafts persons. Say that with a lisp. With an emphasis on sourcing products that are botanical, organic, ecologically conscious, and affordably priced, which is great because I don't always have that much money. Raven and Crone is a witch-owned and operated old-age metaphysical pagan supply store located in the Blue Ridge mountain town of Asheville, North Carolina. Raven and Crone is where I, Jasper, facilitate meditations and teach Tarot 101. The link is in the show notes. I have something to tell you. I am a book nerd and a bit of an anarchist. You might have noticed already. And that is why I am so deeply honored to be an affiliate of Firestorm Books. Firestorm Books is a collectively owned radical bookstore and community event space in Asheville, North Carolina. Since 2008, Firestorm Books has supported grassroots movements in Southern Appalachia while developing a workplace on the basis of cooperation, empowerment, and equity. If you go to queerconjure.org and on the upper menu bar, there's a link labeled Books. You just click that link to browse a list of my, Jasper, favorite books. Anything you purchase through that link will return 10% back to me to support the creation of this podcast. So say you buy a book for $30, Firestorm sends me $3. Firestorm's mission is to demonstrate the feasibility and desirability of a workplace based on free cooperation. They seek to sustain and nourish their collective through fulfilling work, personal empowerment, and equitable compensation while providing a hub for anarchist thought and culture in WNC.